No, it's the men.
You can feel what others feel. You can understand those feelings.
I'm beginning to wonder about that.
Isn't that a little bit morbid?
The most bizarre event of this night occurs.
Holy leaping man!
Another flash of recollection from your former life. Two old friends of yours, Man-Thing.
I'd almost come to think of you as human.
What we call a transformation.
Man-Thing. Welcome to Man-Thing Minute. All the Man-Thing news you can use in a podcast. I'm Adam Teteris, your host and giant-size fan-thing. And the pursuit of this program is to propagate the popularity of Marvel's misunderstood muck monster one issue, one episode, and one guest at a time. My guest today, a real OG in the pantheon of Man-Thing Minute, Emmy Award-winning host of WHYY's Check Please Philly, writer and host of Delishtery on PBS, and host of the Amuse Bouche podcast and newsletter, a very early supporter of Man-Thing Minute. Please welcome Kehlani Palmisano. Hi, Kehlani.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
You go way back with this bad concept. You really do. You are an OG for Man-Thing Minute. Thanks for supporting me through the thick and the thin.
Oh, yeah. I think it was... I went back onto Mastodon and realized that a few posts in, we had a Man-Thing Minute back in 2018. We were doing some kind of car bit, whatever was the trend back then.
Yeah, there's no real good way to describe what it was because it was very weird even for its time. But the idea was it was going to take part in the Drake In My Feelings Challenge. This was back in the day when Man-Thing Minute was literally a minute. Isn't that notable? There was a time when it was only 60 seconds. So the idea was Drake had the song In My Feelings, and then everybody was doing these videos where they would start the song and they were listening to it in a car. And then the passenger of the car, pretty much always a beautiful woman, would get out of the car and then dance alongside the driving vehicle to the beat of In My Feelings. And so, of course, that's what we had started doing, right? And I have the camera on you, and you're in the passenger side of your car.
Yes.
Parked on the sidewalk. And you get out as you hear In My Feelings, and then I turn the camera to face me, and I talk about the man thing instead. Great. What comedy?
It was like a Rick roll, but it was a man thing roll. A Drake roll.
Yeah. Not a lobster roll, not a Drake roll, not a Rick roll, but a man thing roll. The item on everybody's sushi restaurant menu that no one dares order.
It would be all seaweed. It would just be seaweed wrapped with like more seaweed. I mean, we'll get into this later. I didn't realize you could punch through man thing.
Yeah.
That he's kind of an amorphous blob a little bit.
Yeah. The anatomy. This is something that's kind of funny. On episodes of this podcast, folks generally comment on two things. One, that apparently you can just slide right through this guy. Like, he's got nothing going on in him.
But he can grab you.
But he can grab you. Right. So he can kind of firm up enough to whack somebody. And then the other thing people tend to get hung up on is, and fortunately it was not present in this comic that we read, is that the man thing is constantly battling Florida alligators. He's just beating them up. And I'm so happy that you didn't have to experience that. But strangely, bizarrely, this, you know, creature of nature itself is just constantly beating up on alligators. And a lot of folks, justifiably, want to know why. Kehlani, I don't have the answers. I don't.
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out one man thing minute at a time.
That is what we're trying to figure out one man thing minute at a time. Let's take an aside from man thing minute and talk about your background with comics, with the medium. You read a comic with me today. That's the premise of the show. But I want to know, you know, going back before I invited you to do this deed, are you a comic fan? Do you follow any characters? Do you have any favorite books?
I was kind of on the fringes. I was on the outside. I think my first ever comic I ever read was a Far Side Gallery book my dad had on his side of the bed. And I just remember like going into my parents' room and just sitting in between on the, his side of the bed and then his nightstand. And it was a stack of volumes, Far Side Gallery comics that I just thought were a trip when I was a kid. And then it progressed later on into a lot more of the indie comics. I wasn't into the Cape comics. I loved a lot of graphic novels. And I also fancied myself, I don't know, when I was a kid, I used to also really enjoy drawing comics, which was a lot of fun.
Like kind of the Gary Larson Far Side kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. It was just goofy things that was happening in my 8-year-old life. Something funny that happened at school, or something funny that happened at a store, or something silly that happened at a family dinner. I called them KK's Comics. And I actually did my little comics all the way through high school, and then college I stopped because too much work. But yeah, sure. I dabbled in making my own. In terms of comics that I've read, more on the serious side of comics, I think my friend in high school, who's like in between high school and college, she gave me a graphic novel called Plain Janes. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No, I don't know this one.
It's about a girl. I really loved it. It resonated with me. The girl moves out of the city and into a small suburban town. Her name is Jane. She meets three other Janes, and they're all rejects. And they just like do art all around their town under the cloak of night. And so every morning there'd be like new artwork in this suburban town. And everyone was like, where is this artwork coming from? I really think it was the first time I've ever heard of the yarn bombing concept.
Because
I think they did some yarn bombing in that. So I really liked that. I really liked Seconds, who is Brian Lee O'Malley, who did Scott Pilgrim. Brian Lee O'Malley.
Yep.
It was like Seconds. What was the, I think I wrote some notes in my phone. It was like, whatever, which is funny. So this is so my style. I would always read the B-sides, but I didn't read Scott Pilgrim.
Sure.
There was another one, Lost at Sea. It was the other one.
Lost at Sea. Well, the B-sides thing, you know, I think the man thing is a B-side, you know, as far as comic book characters go. No disrespect. I'm his biggest fan, but I must admit. So what would you say attracted you to the B-sides, as you put it?
They were just misunderstood. And I was definitely a very misunderstood, very strange, very weird. I was drawing comics. Yeah. Like, you know, I was a strange kid. And then later, I guess later in life, it just was more. I love graphic novels. I really do love graphic novels. Box Brown, who I think he lives in Philly.
Yes, he does.
He did a really cool one about the history of Tetris.
Yes.
Really good one.
I bought that book because of my last name. My last name, I was constantly being called Tetris when I was a kid, and my parents, I can't understand why they would do this, but when I was in, I think kindergarten, maybe first grade, I went to school and I had a backpack in the shape of a Game Boy. Right. So the back of it that's facing out to all these other kids was the face of a Game Boy. Very cool, like Nintendo Game Boy. And the game that was playing on it was Tetris. Why would my parents condemn me to this fate? They knew full well what the game was. They knew that it was just one syllable away from our last name. And it had earned me that nickname for, or not even earned it. I already had it, right? Tetris was already popular.
Oh, no.
It just like bolstered it. And I, you know, fought like hell to say, it's not Tetris. It's not Tetris. Although now in hindsight, I probably should have just doubled
down. Just worn it well, like a badge of pride.
Yeah.
That's so funny. All these years, Adam, and I never even put those things together. I never would have been creative enough to call you Adam Tetris.
Yeah, Tetris. Did anybody ever play with your last name?
Thomasano is the married last name. Remember, I was a Kennedy. This is how long ago Man Thing Minute was. I was a Kehlani Kennedy.
KK, of course.
Yeah, KK. I mean, the joke was, oh, the Kennedy curse, or I get asked if I was part of the Kennedys. And I'm like, no, I'm like, we're the black sheep Kennedys, where I'm off-brand Kennedy. Yeah. internationally, it was always very fun because, okay, so I grew up in a town called Berlin, New Jersey. Uh-huh. And then when I moved to Germany, I was a Kennedy who was from Berlin. And like John F. Kennedy's very famous speech, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Berliner, yeah.
Which is, yes, it is actually a jelly donut, but also Berliners do call themselves Berliners. But it's just like, that's their city's donut. Like every city has a bread and every city has a beer. That's kind of coincides with, you know, the region. Mm-hmm. But I got a lot of Kennedys, but I was also called KK,
yeah,
which was really fun, which hence the KK's comics.
KK's comics, which I think is really great. And, did you ever play Animal Crossing?
I did not.
You didn't get into it during 2020 when everyone started playing Animal Crossing?
I sat with John and watched him play it.
One of the characters in Animal Crossing is a dog who plays the guitar, and his name is KK Slider.
And I know, you know, about KK
maybe
Slider.
You have like some kind of intrinsic bond with KK. KK Slider is very cool, by the way. He's a cool guy.
I love, what was it? What nights a week is he playing at the club? Which is usually when John pops in to tend to things. It's like, get the new KK Slider song.
I would love to go to that club. I would love to go to that club. So I want to go all the way back to the Gary Larson and Farside and the comic strip thing. What do you think, if there is any difference between those kind of comics and the like comic strip comics and graphic novel comics? So how do you delineate the two of those things in your mind?
They're all really valuable in different respects. Like later on in my graphic novel exploration, I really got into the kind of graphic novel essays or the memoirs. So a lot of Alison Bechdel. I loved Fun Home. Now I'm actually reading The Secret to Superhuman Strength. I'm actually trying to milk it because I don't want to finish it because it is an incredible graphic novel.
Yeah.
But I always walk away with what I love about the Gary Larson comics is the brevity. I am very envious of people who can convey a big idea in a small comic, which is actually what an amuse-bouche is.
Yeah.
Speaking of like that, an amuse-bouche, the idea of it is it's a chef distilling all of their creativity into a very small single bite.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Gary Larson and other comic book strip artists, because I got into Calvin and Hobbes too. I feel like that was a natural segue.
The best.
Calvin and Hobbes, and then of course like the Garfield comics, especially the Calvin and Hobbes ones. They were just so very like almost transcendental, almost always talking about society in some respect, but in a very childlike and naive way. So it was almost like in a very short strip, or even sometimes in one panel, you could convey. It could be two different stories. It could be a kid just like playing with his imagination, or a kid making a very profound commentary on life. But then the graphic novels also pull you into the mind of a character, because there's a lot of monologue. There's a lot of a lot of times with the graphic novels, you're usually following a character, and there's always like the editor panels that are like, this is what's going through their mind, kind of a thing.
Sure. Today is a momentous occasion. Not only are you returning from your previous stint as a performer and participant in the Man Thing Minute sketch, this is the first time we've even dipped our webbed feet into Howard the Duck.
I'm glad you specified webbed feet, because I have notes.
Okay. Well, yeah, we're going to have to talk about that. But, you know, before we even get into Howard the Duck and this specific issue, do you have any history with Mr. the Duck?
I'm fairly certain that at one point or multiple points in my childhood, Howard the Duck, the movie,
yes,
was either I don't know if we had a the VHS of it or it was that bad it ended up on cable television.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I do specifically remember watching not the movie in its entirety, just snippets and parts of it here and there being like, that is a weird and ugly character.
It was scary. It was like an animatronic suit. And of course, the duck is playing opposite of the absolutely stunning Leah Thompson. Mm-hmm. Which was very confusing for me as a young man. I was like, she is gorgeous. And I can't look at this movie without being extremely disturbed. So I don't like know what to do with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then not to mention that's a George Lucas movie.
Yeah. After the success of what? All of the Star Wars. Then all of a sudden, Howard the Duck.
Yeah, Howard happened. The Duck. And it kind of doubles back on itself because the issue that we are reading today is a parody of Star Wars. And this issue that we are reading today is Howard the Duck number 22. This was written by Steve Gerber. This was drawn by Val Mayrick. Val and Steve co-created Howard the Duck in a previous issue of A Man-Thing comic. The inker is named Bill Ray. The colorist is Janice Cohen. And Steve Gerber edited this as well. I don't always mention the editor, but I do think it's important that the guy who wrote this edited himself.
So this was also, this was also edited by Steve Gerber?
He did it all himself. Previous episode of Man-Thing Minute, we got to talking about how Man-Thing comics were often getting away with murder because nobody was looking at them. The editor just wasn't paying attention. And so Gerber could do whatever he wanted to, which I think is fabulous. But in a lot of cases, it also means like no quality control, right? There's just nobody looking at this and saying, yeah, we're good. And in this case, I think Howard the Duck was particularly a passion project. Really interesting history before we try to break down the contents of this issue.
First, I'm going to pour some wine for this one.
You're going to need to pour some wine. Everybody, listeners, pour a glass of wine. Settle in. It's story time. So Howard the Duck first appeared in an issue of Adventure into Fear, which was one of the first comic books starring the Man-Thing. Man-Thing number one comes out. And Howard the Duck is in that because Man-Thing number one, now stick with me, is a continuation from an Adventure into Fear book. So they started the story with a different comic with a different title. Confusing, right? Howard the Duck first appears in the Adventure into Fear book. Howard the Duck continues into Man-Thing number one. Howard the Duck is killed instantly in Man-Thing number one. And there's a reason for it. So get back to the editor. Roy Thomas was the editor at the time, and Roy liked the Adventure into Fear and Man-Thing idea because it was horror, and they wanted to sell horror comics. When they introduce Howard the Duck, Roy Thomas says, this is a funny creature. So Roy says, get rid of the duck. And Steve Gerber, I think, was probably mad about this. And so in Man-Thing number one, he just kills him. In fact, the way that he dies is the team, Korek, the Barbarian, Dakim, the Wizard, Man-Thing, Jennifer Kale in her boob armor, and Howard are all jumping from platform to platform, and Howard misses his step, and he just falls off of a platform into a void, and he's just dead. That's it. You would think nothing of it, except apparently fans in the 70s loved Howard the Duck and his 1.5-issue cameo. And so they wrote letters to Marvel. One fan allegedly sent a dead duck to Marvel.
Oh, that's horrible. People are wild.
People are so... Comics people... Howard the Duck people are wild.
I'm also kind of glad... Like, I felt like toxic fans was an our generation thing. Uh-huh. So I'm kind of glad to hear that it's not really new. I know that's like, that's kind of bad, but
you're glad to hear glad that every generation not, had them.
Yeah. That I'm glad that there was a uprising, that like there were, rabid fans of things prior to our generation.
There were rabid fans. Absolutely. At a Comic-Con in the 70s, someone got up and asked Roy Thomas in a big crowd, when are you bringing Howard the Duck back? The crowd went nuts. And Marvel was basically forced to revive this thing that they thought was so dumb. Now, we are reading issue 22 of, I think Gerber wrote 28 or 29 issues of this book. And so by this time, it's a little late in the game. But Howard and the Man-Thing had not reconnected in all this time. His very first appearance, his immediate death, and here we go many years later, and we have Howard the Duck 22.
I love how he's so obviously Donald Duck in this still. And yeah. I love that this is after, I guess this is after Disney requests that he make changes to the character, which is why I said, I'm glad that you talked about webbed feet rather than toes, because one of the edits that they wanted him to make was to have toes, which was gross.
Yeah, there were weird things. So it was like close to the time, it was before they made the Howard the Duck movie, and Disney was clearly becoming aware of this character. What a weird thing to have to worry about, right? But Howard the Duck was very popular. The first Howard the Duck issue, Howard number one, was a huge collector's item, or at least it was forecast to be. And then because people bought it up in such huge stocks, it didn't end up being valuable at all. And Disney notices this and they're like, hold on. No. You can't do this. We have to seal the deal and say, you know, you're either going to stop doing this or we'll come up to some settlement. And part of the settlement specifically was his redesign, having toes and wearing pants. He now has to wear pants. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I guess was it a comic or so before this one where he wears the pants and then the pants come off.
Did you read multiple Howard the Duck comics?
Yeah, well, John downloaded all of them for me.
Oh my goodness. Listeners, Kehlani is showing me a tablet filled to the brim.
I think it's all of them, actually.
It's every Howard the Duck. It's all of them. So it wait, how many did you... No, you didn't have to do that. I feel like I've cursed you.
No, it's not a curse at all. Well, I mean, John, he's reading like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I'm like, well, I need to be reading something too. So,
many did you read?
I just kind of like glanced at the ones a little bit before and after 22. Idea. So, but like I did read more about the Howard the Duck universe, and which is how I knew about which is how I knew about Steve Gerber and his brazenness toward toward Disney. Bravo.
Yes. Yeah, Gerber, and this was not the first time Gerber had legal trouble with a character that was too similar to another character. In an issue of Adventure into Fear, they created a character called Wundar, and it was just a parody of Superman. And they got in a lot of trouble for doing that. Yeah, he had issues with other franchises, and he had a lot of things to say, and he had a book that he was editing himself. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, now it kind of makes a lot of sense because it was hard to understand what was happening in this. I definitely had to kind of go back. I took a lot of notes too, just so I didn't lose myself, because they introduce like 10 characters or something wild in just this one issue alone.
They do. Yeah. They reintroduce the characters from that first party in Adventure into Fear. They introduce some new characters that have impossible names. They introduce names and places. The story starts with an ape salt shaker. All hell has broken loose. And I think the idea here is, you know, that the nexus of all realities, you know, this like critical pivot point of all dimensions has busted open because things are happening that just don't make any sense. And to its credit, even Howard doesn't understand what's going on. The comic itself is May the Farce Be With You. So as explained, this is a Star Wars parody, which is great. George Lucas apparently not bothered by it. No legal issues there. And I wonder, Kehlani, would you attempt to describe what happens in this comic?
Howard the Duck is minding his own business on the roof of his house apartment. Oh, Lee Switzler's New York apartment house.
Like, why do we care? It could just be any place. Superheroes just going to hang out on rooftops. So it's fine.
I mean, he's smoking what could be a cigar or a blunt. We don't know. And he's minding his business, but then all of a sudden he's attacked by two absurd creatures. We have a monkey, or like it's a salt shaker with monkey limbs.
Yeah.
What did I name him? Oh, Ape Shaker.
Ape Shaker. Great name.
Mm-hmm. he jumps off a roof. But then immediately after he's done with Ape Shaker, we get a big house fly, like a gigantic house fly. He hits them with a guitar. And that's when our friends from, what was it, Fear of the...
Adventure into Fear 19.
Adventure into Fear.
Man-Thing 1. Yeah.
Okay, so our, like, we have Man-Thing and Dakim the Enchanter, our wizard friend.
Yeah, our like really shitty Renaissance Fair wizard. Yes.
Yes, and we learn that Howard is somehow the key to solving some kind of issue between like universes. So we go to the land between night and day, where we reunite with, hold up, Korak the Barbarian and Jennifer Kale.
That's right. Yeah. So the team's here now.
The gang's all here.
Also, weird little detail. You'll notice Howard the Duck is wearing a Kent State shirt.
I was going to ask, what was that about?
The Kent State massacre occurred, I think, in 1970. And so this is a good long while after that.
So that's a choice.
Gerber is a very politically minded person and was extremely anti-Vietnam. And he writes a lot about that in Man-Thing comics. He has characters espousing that. He has soldiers showing up and they don't know what war they're fighting, that kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
It occurred to me, you know, maybe it's a little bit of that. Or, hear me out, this is a bit of a stretch. The Kent State Massacre occurred on May 4th. So this is a Star Wars parody. Is that a part of it?
That's got layers.
There's a lot. It's like a real lasagna of metaphor. I don't know why. It's never explained or addressed or acknowledged. But
see, this is the story that's happening underneath. And maybe there are other themes, like if we dug into it deeper, maybe there's other themes that are resonating with this.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it's a battle. So Howard learns that he's got to fight some kind of battle. Maybe he doesn't want to fight this. Well, he clearly doesn't want to fight this battle, but they go into, what was it? Into some castle's ancient walls where there's this crazy pool, the waters of eternity. and the wizard Dakim tells Howard all about how there is Megrim, an immortal queen, what's the period of time? Does she do this annually or once in a while or when she's in the mood?
It's actually really strange. They specify, but it's still a little vague. They say every millennium or two, dependent upon her biological requirements. I don't really know what that's supposed to mean, but I guess it's like she gets horny every millennium or two.
Yeah.
So the place is called Megrim and she is named Sombra.
Sombra. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So Sombra of Megrim, she brings all of these warriors from other worlds to battle it out. And then the lone survivor becomes her demon lover.
Uh-huh.
And I guess like in their mating process, very praying mantis style, she kills him or kills the lover and then brings to term, I guess, whoever this person's child is. But one millennium, there's this warrior. What's his name? I don't know if I got this guy's name.
I don't remember what his name was. I just remember he was...
Because he was too insane to stop fighting.
He was too insane. And all he says is Wug.
And his face.
Yeah,
it says Wug. Yeah.
Wug.
He just says Wug. You know, he got lunatic gladiator wanted her. And she was like, yeah, but, you know, if you mate with me, you're going to be dead. And he just doesn't care. Wants her all the more.
It is really nice of her to just say that out front, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Like, given the fact that Gerber has taken great pains to say, look, this lady is crazy. She's a demon. She has sex with these demons. And then she saps all their power and they die. And then she gives birth to a perfect combo that is super powerful. But also before she does that to Wug or whomever this is, she sets it up. You know, she gets his consent. And he's down.
It's also interesting because he's fighting, but he's been hacked and stabbed within an inch of his life. So he's not even that good of a fighter to begin with. He's just
crazy.
A survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So.
He has psycho endurance, I guess.
Yes. And so I guess, oh, I love this part. No words would dissuade him. Somber shrugged. The madman died happy.
Yeah.
At least he died happy.
At least he died happy. And then that weird panel following that where Sombra has his face and she's saying, "Wug, what happened?"
I'm not sure. We kind of lose track of her because now we're, or at least in this issue, we lose track of her. I don't know if we catch up with her at another time, but
TBA.
Yeah, I guess she has a child, and this child, I guess, is the issue now.
The one that Howard has been summoned to confront. Yeah.
Berserk Jaw.
Yeah. Yeah. Howard calls him Berserk Joe, but his name is spelled really funky. It's like Bzk and then hyphen J-O-H, Bzk Joe.
But I like what Dakim says. It's the child has inherited both his mother's depressive tendencies and the father's madness. So what a combination there.
Mm-hmm.
But we learn that Howard needs to be the leader of this pack to kind of stop this madness from happening. And then all of a sudden, Dakim, he disappears because, you know, of course, we all know that his time in the material world was limited.
Yeah, we do all know that, right? That, of course, that's understood. For some reason, Dakim apparently is dead, and this is the ghost or a projection of Dakim. Like, I don't know. I don't know what is happening.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, yeah, that's right. I forgot to mention that. He's dead. Oh, that's such an important plot point. Dakim is actually dead. He's a hologram, because that's right. He couldn't open the door to the castle. Jennifer Kale had to. Because I also learn in this that Jennifer Kale is his apprentice.
Yes. Yeah, Jennifer Kale from earlier issues of Adventure into Fear created it alongside Man-Thing. Friend of the Man-Thing was just like a woman who lived in Florida who is a member of this weird family of cultists, but they were like slightly normie cultists compared to the other ones. And then as it turns out that she is like the real world analog to this sorceress who is named Zared Nah. She was the sorceress of Atlantis, and now Jennifer Kale has kind of taken her role and is Jennifer Kale sporting truly wild bikini armor. I've always liked Jennifer Kale. There's no real explanation here other than it feels like kind of a parody of Conan the Barbarian or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All of it just feels very parody. Like the whole time Howard is really hesitant. He doesn't want to go with them. He doesn't want to get drug into this madness. And this is when he kind of has like a tiff with Man-Thing for a moment, but it's because Man-Thing feeds off of his energy. So Howard the Duck seems really negative. I feel like he probably could do things, but he doesn't believe in himself. So he just like is super negative about it and rejects the situation before the situation can reject him. Mm. I mean, that's just my thoughts.
We're getting closer to Gerber having a falling out with Marvel. He stopped writing for Marvel in like 78. And this is 77, 78. And so
we're not that far away.
Yeah, I can't help but wonder, you know, it's clear sometimes Gerber is having fun. It's clear sometimes he's using Howard to like have a kind of anguished, annoyed perspective of the world and people in it. And who doesn't have that side of them, right? Mm-hmm. Like this book is a bit of Mad Magazine meets Curb Your Enthusiasm, but for Marvel Comics. And I kind of feel like Steve Gerber is channeling his frustrations, maybe with his entire career, through this comic, and he's just throwing stuff at the wall because why not?
Do you know anything about his personal life? Like, was he in Vietnam, or was he just super against it?
I think he wasn't drafted or conscripted. He wasn't in the army. As long as I know about his career, he was in comics and storytelling and a writer. And I think it's more of that, like, you know, in that era when he was a writer, this was a liberal career path to have. Mm-hmm. And so in the pages of these comics, he was telling people what he thinks, maybe surreptitiously. Maybe he was using his platform to say, look, it's deeper than just Iron Man zipping around. There are mm-hmm. other messages that you can impart to young people or the future or people who understand this and they'll pick up my comic. And it's clear he found an audience of interesting folks who vibe with it. It resonated. So let's finish the comic so we can try to figure out what it's all about.
So they kind of retreat into what seems like Dakeem's apartment, which is completely furnished.
Not sure what's happening.
It has electricity, full-blown modern kitchen. And he's like, I'm going to go to the refrigerator. I haven't eaten all day. And as he opens the refrigerator, it's this gigantic pickle.
Uh-huh.
An actual pickle. We're all in a pickle now.
Uh-huh.
And so Man-Thing is defending Howard and protecting him against this pickle, getting into this fight with this pickle. And the pickle fight is pretty good.
It is pretty good. Yeah. The man thing like takes chunks of him. He beats him with his own pickle chunks. The pickle is just yelling pickle related words like duh ill and kosher. He at one point
sweet
dying, he says relish. So,
oh yeah, that's what he says.
Yeah, it's just a giant pickle fight like you do. And then finally we meet Bzzk Joe.
Yes, and he's taking Jennifer Kale, and then is also asking people, please don't curse. He seems to be a little bit of a gentleman. Oh, and he says wug too.
Yeah, he says wug. We gotta start saying, everybody needs to start saying wug. Korek says Zok. That's his curse, I guess.
Yeah.
And Bzzk Joe says wug. And I feel like one of those, if not both of them, need to stick around. So what are we doing here? Like what? I think the main reason why I wanted to eventually read Howard the Duck is because this is a character that people recognize. He's in the MCU. He's appeared in so many different places. People know what Howard the Duck is for the most part. Howard was created in a Man-Thing comic, and so it is inherently attached to the Man-Thing and therefore belongs in this program. But this is the first time we've read a fully Howard the Duck comic. What's happening? It's so bizarre.
I think Howard is in for a introspective journey about what his capabilities are and also what it means to be accountable for people. Like the universe is hinging on him, and who actually wants the universe? Nobody actually does want that. Nobody wants that. You rise to the occasion. So we're going to see if Howard can rise to the occasion. But I feel as though Man-Thing's silent support and wisdom is kind of guiding him along too, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Deep down, maybe Howard does know he has to do, because Man-Thing is a very empathetic character. So he's feeding off of Howard's energy. That's the only way that he can communicate. Maybe he does know that Howard is eventually going to save the universe.
Yeah, I really like that moment when the Man-Thing goes to the top of the castle and taps on Howard's back. And, you know, he doesn't have to say anything, and he can't. But it's he's like giving him a pep talk or a check-in. Like, are you good? Is everything okay? Because the Man-Thing clearly perfectly understands what Howard feels. It's all he understands is people's feelings and emotions. And folks are not stopping to ask Howard, are you good with this? You know, he's thrown into this by the ghost of a wizard. Jennifer Gale's like, hey, I'm so happy to see you. Let's get the band back together. Korek is weird and bro-ish, right? He wants to bro down, but Howard is clearly not. And the Man-Thing is the one who has a quiet by design, a quiet moment with Howard. And Howard really spills his guts and says, you know, why would I want to fight for a world like this one? Why would you? Of all the raw deals from here to eternity, you got the blue plate special. But the Man-Thing and Howard are interesting diametric opposition because they both have strange circumstances that have brought them to where they are. The Man-Thing seems to be at least curious in helping people, like even if it's just by accident, he's open to it and curious.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Howard is vehemently against doing anything for anybody, even for himself at times.
He's got like a little air of entitlement of, why aren't other people doing things for me? Kind of a me first. But yeah, I can see that.
I think it was interesting early in our conversation, you mentioned Calvin Hobbes, because I think the two of these characters have a bit of a Calvin and Hobbes relationship, because Howard is mouthy and kind of mean and sardonic, and he has something to say about everything. He's trying to figure things out, or at least just get by as lightly as possible without being infringed upon. And then there's the man thing, and the two of them are sometimes depicted as like a twosome, a duo. And the man thing is bigger and weirder and has less to say. And I can't help but see the comparison between Calvin and Hobbes a little bit, you know?
And especially because Hobbes is actually just a dog. Because oftentimes in that comic, you see him as a tiger, like actually interacting and talking with him. And then other times, it's just Calvin holding a doll. So really, it's actually a part of Calvin. And I feel as though, like, Howard might be just projecting a little bit onto Man-Thing, especially since Man-Thing is an empathetic. Again, he's feeding off of Howard's energy a little bit.
Yeah. And the Man-Thing does force Howard to chill out a little. You know, early on when they reunite, Howard is frantic and he's upset, understandably. And the man thing is,
he becomes irate and upset a little bit from it too. So,
and so
he has
Dakeem
to
is like, hey man, exactly. Yeah. You got to take a deep breath, man. And so, you know, maybe to your point, not only is he projecting on this other version of himself, but, it goes both ways, where sometimes that big, strong, silent type helps him. Like, by default, if you want to survive, you really got to take it down a notch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to share this quote with you from Steve Gerber. Gerber says, and this is his quote, "Life's most serious moments and most incredibly dumb moments are often distinguishable only by a momentary point of view." You know, that the heavy stuff and the completely ridiculous, trivial stuff, depending on who's looking at it and the context and their perspective, it's this all the same stuff. And so as I was reading this and thinking, this is overwhelmingly zany, I couldn't help but think about Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes. Yeah.
And that movie is so zany and lowbrow and silly, but it's so
affecting. But you cry at the end.
You cry. Yeah. And not that Howard is necessarily pulling those heartstrings, but I think that, you know, the man thing is trying to go in the direction of that. Like, look, there's an emotional vibration that runs through all of us. The man thing is a vessel that observes it. And then there's Howard, who's pointing out the absurdity. And these are two parts of the same man. These are Steve Gerber. This is the you know,
I guess
two puzzle pieces.
That kind of resonates with what he says right at the top. Let me see. Did I write this down? Or I think, oh yeah, a ducktail that spans the galaxy and goes nowhere. So like kind of that quote. Yeah, it says that right at the beginning. And I wrote that in my notes because it kind of resonated of like, oh yeah, it's a huge story. It's big, it's triumphant, but it goes nowhere.
Yeah. And not to mention Howard the Duck's slogan or catchphrase is on the front of the comic, and it's "trapped in a world he never made." And that always kind of perplexed me because, well, no one made the world that they're trapped in. And so to me, usually the motto is something that calls out something specific or exclusive to the character. This is why he's special. This is his ability, the thing. But in this case, it's making Howard the everyman, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, not only is he weird in this world, but he's trapped in a world he never made. Well, I didn't make my world. You didn't make your world. It's the question of perspective. Like, do you think you're trapped? What do you make of that?
You didn't make the world, but what you make of it is what matters. And I think his disposition is so kind of curmudgeon-y, and it is kind of a shame of just like, well, okay, you didn't ask for this, but you could make what you want of it, Howard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If only you try. If only you cared in iota, Howard.
Maybe he does. Maybe he learns eventually. But I get the impression from this character that he's a little he's indulging in the negativity and wallowing that I think a lot of people do have, but maybe don't allow themselves to indulge in, or like, I definitely don't think it's a space to indulge in too often, but it is also a natural space to kind of like, every once in a while, sit on the top of your roof and go, how the hell did I get here?
Yeah. Oh my God. Absolutely. And you know, maybe the value of Howard the Duck as a character is kind of a cautionary tale, right? Like, you don't want to indulge in that all the time, but you know, maybe you need a strong, silent person to help you calm down a little bit. You know, maybe you need to find some balance.
If only you
can shape up and have a group of friends.
Yeah. And the character itself is like, I guess it resonated with people because it's like, oh, it allowed people to indulge in a way that was like still kind of healthy and processing and whatever.
Sure. Better to do it vicariously through this weird duck comic book than to do it in your own life with your friends and your family and your boss.
Exactly. Don't ruin your life with a bad attitude. Just like read Howard the Duck.
Don't be a Howard. Read Howard. Were there any panels that grabbed your attention? Did you have a favorite?
Right at the dead beginning, I like feeling like how the world is so different and how it suddenly has changed. And it's this really unfamiliar place. That's how I feel in my 30s. Like all of a sudden.
Okay. Yeah.
All of a sudden. We're not the young ones anymore. And that freaks me out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely, I mean, I guess like, so I turned 30 and then the pandemic happened and now I'm like 33. So I feel like I like lost 3 years. I mean,
it feels like you got sucked into the nexus of all realities and here you are, you lost time. Stuff doesn't make sense.
Lost time. Stuff doesn't make sense. All of a sudden, like I was working in Kansas City and I teamed up with an intern and she like was born after 9/11 and like was a whole like 12 years, like she's not even 21. She's like a few months away from 21. She'll be 21 in this February. Uh-huh. And it just blew my mind because I remember being in my 20s and looking up to people in my 30s. Now I'm in my 30s. But yeah, so it just felt like, oh wow, the world has changed. And it felt like it changed so quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at it on a, I guess what, macro, micro, whatever level, if you look at it, it's like, oh, okay, I can see where it all changed. Retrospect is 2020, but
yeah,
I definitely felt the very first page, all those moments where you're sitting on a rooftop in a city and you're just like, so much has changed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what you wake up, you're 30 or in your 30s or after your 30s, you think, well, you know, I've got my life on lock. And then suddenly your home is being scaled by Ape Shaker. There's no double dead wizard who's going to open a door and say, there's no time to explain. You just got to come with me.
I'm not fighting pickles in the fridge, although I do fight other foods in the fridge. Like,
I feel like if of all of the people who have guested on this show, you would be the person who has, in fact, fought a pickle. I would have guessed. But no.
The fight is really just wrangling the lactobacillus bacteria.
Hey, speak on it.
For the fermentation. Yes.
I had a favorite panel in here, and it's when the Man-Thing confronts Howard and gives him that little pep talk. But there is a specific panel. I'll hold it up to you, but it looks like the Man-Thing is touching his cheek and he's almost like bashful.
There's
this moment when Howard is just complaining and spewing this like anger and frustration and anxiety. And the Man-Thing is touching his face almost like you can read the expression of him saying, oh, I hadn't really thought about it like that. Or he's maybe taken aback by, you know, the anger that this little guy is boosting out into the world. But there was something about that I liked so much. There's such a gentleness to that image. And I have a tattoo of the Man-Thing on my forearm, which is not surprising.
I remember when you got it. Yeah.
Yeah. And the, there's a specific part of the tattoo that's very important to me. It came from this artist who made a Valentine's Day card using the Man Thing. And, it has the Man Thing's face on it, but his eyes, instead of just being bright red, like orbs, are little hearts. And to me, like, the Man Thing has always had this very subtle heart. It's subtle in that sometimes it is used to depict the tragedy of it all. Like, he was a guy, but now he's a monster. How sad. Sometimes it's funny because he's this big, scary monster, but he has feelings. He is powered by vibes. And it's just such an important element of the Man Thing to me. And the fact that Steve Gerber and Val Mayerik made this comic and then have this one moment where he softly touches his own cheek. That is the Man
that thing was a choice.
Me. That's a choice. That is a choice. I love that panel very much. I love that.
Oh, of course.
After this experience, would you ever read a Howard the Duck issue again?
Oh yeah. I'm probably tonight. I have to know where the rest of this saga goes.
You have to let me know.
Yeah. And I kind of want to, it's so funny. It's like, it's I mean, I know this is Man Thing Minute, but I vibed with Howard a little bit. I mean, I definitely appreciate, of course, I appreciate Man Thing, but in this conversation, I'm the Howard and you're the Man Thing.
Yeah. Well, so today's episode is the Howard Power Hour. So I feel like it makes a lot of sense that Howard is driving the conversation, but it is Man Thing Minute. And in every episode of Man Thing Minute, we like to do a segment where we step into the nexus of all realities and try to connect the world of the Man Thing to your world, Kehlani. Mm-hmm. And I think the only real way to do that is through a recipe. So if the Man Thing were a dish, if you used the Man Thing as a dish, what would you make?
Oh, you know, I know we were talking about sushi earlier, but I'm not going to do that. The first thing that actually did come to mind was some kind of, you know, those Jell-O salads.
Oh God. Yeah. Can you explain that? What was going on during that trend?
It was the mid-century and everyone was all about convenience foods. Yeah. And it was just one of those things. And it was also, the dawn of, like, not dawn, I would say like the Renaissance, the potluck Renaissance. So it was just really cool to bring some kind of dish. This is the time of casseroles. This is the time. It's all the like quick kind of semi homemade. You got, what was her name? Meriwether Post, who is, really pushing the Jell-O product. Uh-huh. She took over the Post Empire. Have you ever heard of Meriwether Post Pavilion? That's
Animal
actually
Collective.
Her. Yes, that's actually her. That is a beautiful venue, by the way, near DC. That's like her mansion out there. But also, funny, crazy story, she owned Mar-a-Lago before Trump, but that's like a whole other day.
Yeah, really?
Mar-a-Lago was actually like built on the Jell-O money.
Oh my God. This, all of these connections to be made. This is the true nexus of all realities, because I've previously made jokes about how Trump and the whole drain the swamp thing was related to Man Thing, and the fact that Mar-a-Lago itself is in Florida and the Man Thing is from Florida. There's too many connections for me to feel comfortable. I don't feel good about this.
It just, like, because he embodies so much and he takes on so many properties, I just think about the infinite possibilities of these crazy Jell-O salads that emerged from the mid-century. People were throwing, like, I liked the, like, the Jell-O's as desserts. Okay, the ones with, like, marshmallows in it. Okay, that seems pretty tame.
Yeah,
but the
sure.
ones that had, like, carrots, spinach, peas, the ones where they were like, yeah, throw some vegetables into it, that was a little strange. But because it's a Mod Podge, amorphous blob that's both solid, it's like a Newtonian state. It's, like, both solid and liquid.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I just think he's, like, a Jell-O. And he kind of does look like a... like a nice Nordic bundt pan that you would do, or like a Jell-O mold, like a very nice Jell-O mold.
You mean like his physical shape kind of resembled? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he kind of does, like, I just imagine you're, you know, kind of like hitting the side of the Jell-O mold and then like you wiggle it out and it's Man Thing.
I like that. I think the shape of it makes sense. If it's kind of green and like There's weird stuff inside of it. I like the way that you pull that in. Like he, you know, absorbs a pickle. He literally does absorb that pickle.
Oh, I'm fairly certain. Yeah, he does. Cause the pickle punches him with both arms. Very,
weird punch.
Yes. Yeah. I would say that he's a Jell-O. He's Jell-O mold.
Jell-O. I like that answer. I'll divulge. I thought I was going to be able to guess what you would answer with. And I thought we were going toward kombucha because to me, you know, the mold property of it, the fermented aspect of it, but more so the fact that kombucha is on its face, it's pretty gross, but it also has this cool, earnest element to me about like having the mother SCOBY and there are components of it that I find like very spiritual and grounded and interesting and wholesome, but on its face, it's pretty nasty. And so you have to be invested in it to see the warmth and goodness of it.
It's reminding me, I have to feed my sourdough starter. I do like fermenting. When I was talking about wrangling bacteria, I was dead serious.
That's totally true. Yeah.
Yeah, it's totally true.
Does it ever burst out of the fridge and yell, "Kosher"? Has this ever happened to you?
I've fed it too much and it got too excited and bubbled over the side. Whoa. So kind of, yeah.
Whoa, I don't even know what follow-up questions to ask. It's so strange to me. This is just a normal thing. This is how sourdough
happens. Like reacts. It is you're using, it's a live thing. It is alive. It's a living thing and you're feeding it because it needs to feast every few days or so. And same with I don't know if you've ever done like the other lactobacillus, like a sauerkraut or done, I don't know. I do sometimes like radishes. Like if you make like a brine and you submerge any type of vegetable, you can pickle that like a Portlandia. You can literally
You can pickle that. You're connected to the nexus of all realities. You have so many commonalities, not just with Howard the Duck, but truly to my guy, the macabre man thing. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate that you have always been game. Of all of the ways that you can spend your time, of all your multitudinous talents, you have always found space in your heart. You've always been game, and I appreciate you so much for that. Thank you so much, Kehlani.
Oh, well, thank you. Honestly, thank you for like roping me into this world and for always like inviting me to do fun things. I really, really love when people are super passionate about something. I really love when people are hyper interested. I'm hyper interested in things too. Mm-hmm. And I just, when other people are expressing that interest, like anyone out there listening, if you want a rando guest, I am like the random guest to bring on to any sort of thing. Cause I'm just like, I learned something new. It gets me reading something that I wouldn't have expected to read. And I have a deep appreciation for any time someone is super passionate about anything.
Yeah. And I think that is why you have found so much success as a host and as a writer. And that leads me to ask, what are you working on right now? And where can we find you and support you?
Oh, yes. So I Check Please Philly is back on the air. So we got the second season rolling. That's on Thursday nights at 7:30. And then you can catch it again on Saturdays at 4 p.m. And then you can find me elsewhere on the internet at Kehlani Says. I'm usually juggling a lot of different things. So I would say like Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Mastodon. I don't know what's going on with the Twitterverse. Anyway, Instagram, TikTok. Those are the places that if you want to see what I'm working on, you can find me. It's at Kehlani Says, K-A-E-L-A-N-I, and then S-A-Y-S, like, because it's the things I say.
And if you would like to hear more of what Kehlani says, then you can also subscribe to her Substack. The newsletter is awesome. It's got a moose boosh.
And then I do have another thing that's in the pipeline that should be starting either in December or January, just called Side Quests.
Whoa.
I don't know how it happened, but I've got Side Quests on Instagram and it's sidequests.substack.com. And if you love more wormholes, like a moose boosh is food wormholes, this is just like, if you like cryptids, if you like treasure hunting in Kansas City, if you like random things, that's going to be the place for it.
I know, and you can tell me if I'm not allowed to tease this, but I know that you have some kind of collaboration with Sarah McAnulty on a cryptid focused side quest. And Sarah joined me on this program and we talked about the Man Thing. She became a big fan of the Man Thing. We talked about Skunk Ape and different cryptids. I know she's a big Mothman fan, and I feel like there's a lot of commonality there.
You are touching on the themes.
It is so awesome. I'm really excited about that. Now, I asked for folks to help write a closer for the show before we recorded, and we've got a new one today. Our outro comes from at Dev Presto, and he wrote, "Whatever knows Beastie Boys' timeless classic Paul Revere." Right, so that's taking the place of fear. Okay, "Whatever knows Beastie Boys' timeless classic Paul Revere burns at the touch of the Man Thing." How are you on Beastie Boys? Are you a fan?
Oh yeah, I'm a fan.
Can I admit to you, the sound of most of their songs hurts my ears. They use like certain sounds that they just hurt my ears. Like Brass Monkey is a hard song for me to listen to.
It's a lot of yelling and trumpets.
It's a lot of yelling and trumpets. It is true. Thank you, Dev Presto, for writing the closer this time. And thank you, Kaylani, for joining me on Man Thing Minute. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next time on Man Thing Minute.